81. There were 12 bunks in Blücher's sick bay, 6 down each side of the narrow cabin. In 8 of them lay German seamen, 5 malaria cases and 3 men injured in the work of repairing her bows. Rosa Oldsmith was in the bunk farthest from the door. She lay behind a movable screen, and a guard sat outside the screen. He wore a pistol at his belt and was wholly absorbed in a year-old Variety magazine, the cover of which depicted a buxom blonde woman in a black corset and high boots with a horsewhip in one hand. The cabin was brightly lit and smelt of antiseptic. One of the malaria cases was in delirium, and he laughed and shouted. The medical orderly moved along the rows of bunks, carrying a metal tray from which he administered the morning dosages of quinine. The time was 5 a.m. Rosa had slept only intermittently during the night. She lay on top of the blankets, and she wore a striped toweling dressing gown over the blue flannel nightgown. The gown was many sizes too large, and she had rolled back the cuffs of the sleeves. Her hair was loose on the pillows and damp at the temples with sweat. Her face was pale and drawn, with bluish smudges of fatigue under her eyes, and her shoulder ached dully where Fleischer had struck her. She was awake now. She lay staring up at the low roof of the cabin, playing over in her mind fragments from the happenings of the last 24 hours. She recalled the interrogation with Captain von Kleiner. He had sat opposite her in his luxuriously furnished cabin, and his manner had been kindly, his voice gentle, pronouncing the English words with blurring of the consonants and a hardening of the vowel sounds. His English was good. "When did you last eat?" he asked her. "I am not hungry," she replied, making no attempt to conceal her hatred. Hatred of them all, this handsome gentleman, the tall lieutenant who stood beside her, and Hermann Fleischer, who sat across the cabin from her, with his knees spread apart, to accommodate the full hang of his belly. "I will send for food." Von Kleiner ignored her protests and rang for his steward. When the food came, she could not deny the demands of her body, and she ate, trying to show no enjoyment. The sausage and pickles were delicious, for she had not eaten since the previous noon. Courteously, von Kleiner turned his attention to a discussion with Lieutenant Killer until she had finished, but when the steward removed the empty tray, he came back to her. "Herr Fleischer tells me you are the daughter of Major O'Flynn, the commander of the Portuguese irregulars operating in German territory?" "I was until he was hanged. Murdered. He was injured and helpless. They tied him to a stretcher." Rosa flared at him, tears starting in her eyes. "Yes," von Kleiner stopped her. "I know. I am not pleased. That is now a matter between myself and Commissioner Fleischer. I can only say that I am sorry. I offer you my condolence." He paused and glanced at Hermann Fleischer. Rosa could see by the angry blue of his eyes that he meant what he said. "But now there are some questions I must ask you." Rosa had planned her replies, for she knew what he would ask. She replied frankly and truthfully to anything that did not jeopardize Sebastian's attempt to place the time fuse aboard Blücher. What were she and Flynn doing when they were captured? Keeping the Blücher under surveillance, waiting to signal her departure to blockading cruisers. How did the British know that Blücher was in the Refugee? The steel plate, of course, then confirmation by aerial reconnaissance. Were they contemplating offensive action against Blücher? No, they would wait until she sailed. What was the strength of the blockade squadron? Two cruisers that she had seen, she did not know if there were other warships waiting over the horizon. Von Kleiner phrased his questions carefully and listened attentively to her replies. For an hour the interrogation continued, until Rosa was yawning openly and her voice was slurred with exhaustion. Von Kleiner realized that there was nothing to be learnt from her. All she had told him she already knew or had guessed. "Thank you," he finished. "I am keeping you aboard my ship. There will be danger here, for soon I will be going out to meet the British warships. But I believe it will be better for you than if I handed you over to the German administration ashore." He hesitated a moment and glanced at Commissioner Fleischer. "In every nation there are evil men, fools and barbarians. Do not judge us all by one man." With distaste at her own treachery, Rosa found that she could not hate this man. A weary smile tugged her mouth and she answered him. "You are kind. Lieutenant Killer will see you into the hospital. I am sorry I can offer you no better quarters, but this is a crowded vessel." When she had gone, Von Kleiner lit a cheroot, and while he tasted its comforting fragrance, he allowed his eyes to rest on the portrait of the two golden women across the cabin. Then he sat up in his chair, and his voice had lost its gentleness as he spoke to the man who lolled on the couch. "Herr Fleischer, I find it difficult to express fully my extreme displeasure at your handling of this affair." After a night of fitful sleep, Rosa lay on her hospital bunk behind the screen and she thought of her husband. If things had gone well, Sebastian must by now have placed the time charge and escaped from Blücher. Perhaps he was already on his way to the rendezvous on the Abati River. If this were so, then she would never see him again. It was her one regret. She imagined him in his ludicrous disguise, and she smiled a little. Dear, lovable Sebastian, would he ever know what had happened to her? Would he know that she had died with those whom she hated? She hoped that he would never know, that he would never torture himself with the knowledge that he had placed the instrument of death with his own hands. "I wish I could see him just once more, to tell him that my death is unimportant beside the death of Hermann Fleischer, beside the destruction of this German warship. I wish only that when the time comes I could see it. I wish there was some way I could know the exact time of the explosion, so I could tell Hermann Fleischer a minute before, when it is too late for him to escape, and watch him. Perhaps he would blubber. Perhaps he would scream with fear. I would like that. I would like that very much." The strength of her hatred was such that she could no longer lie still. She sat up and tied the belt of her gown around her waist. She was filled with a restless, itchy exhilaration. It would be today, she felt sure. Sometime today she would slake this burning thirst for vengeance that had tormented her for so long. She threw her legs over the side of the bunk and pulled open the screen. The guard dropped his magazine and started up from the chair, his hand dropping to the pistol at his hip. "I will not harm you," Rosa smiled at him. "Not yet." She pointed to the door which led into the tiny shower cabinet and toilet. The guard relaxed and nodded acquiescence. He followed her as she crossed the cabin. Rosa walked slowly between the bunks, looking at the sick men that lay in them. "All of you," she thought happily, "all of you." She slid the tongue of the lock across and was alone in the bathroom. She undressed and leaned across the washbasin to the small mirror set above it. She could see the reflection of her head and shoulders. There was a purple and red bruise spreading down from her neck and staining the white swell of her right breast. She touched it tenderly with her fingertips. "Hermann Fleischer," she said the name gloatingly. "It will be today, I promise you that. Today you will die." And then suddenly she was crying. "I only wish you could burn as my baby burned. I wish you could choke and swing on the rope as my father did. And the tears fell fat and slow, sliding down her cheeks to drop into the basin. She started to sob, dry, convulsive gasps of grief and hatred. She turned blindly to the shower cabinet and turned both taps full on so that the rush of the water would cover the sound of her weeping. She did not want them to hear it. Later, when she had bathed her face and body and combed her hair and dressed again, she unlocked the door and stepped through it. She stopped abruptly and through puffy reddened eyes tried to make sense of what was happening in the sick bay. It was crowded. The surgeon was there, two orderlies, four German seamen, and the young lieutenant. All of them hovered above the stretcher that was being manoeuvred between the bunks. There was a man on the stretcher. She could see his form under the single grey blanket that covered him. But Lieutenant Killer's back obscured her view of the man's face. There was blood on the blanket and a brown smear of blood on the sleeve of Killer's white tunic. She moved along the bulkhead of the cabin and craned her head to see around Killer, but at that moment one of the orderlies leaned across to swab the mouth of the man on the stretcher with a white cloth. The cloth obscured the wounded man's face. Bright, frothy blood soaked through the material and the sight of it nauseated Rosa. She averted her gaze and slipped away towards her own bunk at the end of the cabin. She reached the screen, and behind her somebody groaned. It was a low, delirious groan, but the sound of it stopped Rosa instantly. She felt as though something within her chest was swelling to stifle her. Slowly, fearfully, she turned back. They were lifting the man from the stretcher to lay him on an empty bunk. The head lolled sideways, and beneath its stain of bark juice, Rosa saw that dear, well-loved face. "Sebastian!" she cried, and she ran to him, pushing past Killer, throwing herself on the blanket-draped body, trying to get her arms around him to hug him. "Sebastian, what have they done to you?"